Hola.
Okay, if you want to do it, you can do
it. No.
Really?
Yes, I'm sure. No.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Double DM Podcast, where today we are finally talking about making your games hardcore. How you can improve your games by making sure that things are getting harder, conditions get worse, and the players are in environments increasingly more hostile to them. But first, as every week, we are here to talk a little bit about what happened to us the last few weeks. So, Niels, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, mostly. Mostly.
Mostly.
Yeah. TTRPG-wise is... there's a thing. It depends on what happens between two of my players, but maybe I have to kick two of them out or two of them have to leave or however they want to go, whatever they decide. But yeah, there is some mix-up in one of my groups leading to me not having a TTRPG session or any TTRPG sessions with that group currently.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a bit out of the loop in that regard. I have some sessions coming up, but not with that group, but rather with you. So, but that's all the TTRPG stuff for me this week and probably the coming week, depending on what happens on Friday. But yeah, other than that, I'm doing great. I was just at the Ren Fair here in Berlin at Easter and had a lovely time. We dressed up and made some awesome photos, had a lovely time just enjoying the atmosphere there, talking with friends, and overall just having a great, great time. So yeah, nice. Apart from the TTRPG stuff, I'm doing great. But yeah, how about you?
I'm doing great in both regards.
Perfect, perfect.
To be fair. Yeah, I've had TTRPG sessions. Everything in my groups is going normally, even though we had to cut one session short, unfortunately. But hopefully we will pick that up today. At least there's nothing in the way of that.
Mm-hmm.
At least nothing I know. So yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Lots of different sessions for me. Have had and have coming up. So I've had D&D in the past. Storm King's Thunder, where we are still in the first settlement trying to clear out some goblins. And now finding a place to rest in the castle. We had to cut that session short. Unfortunately, due to the fact that one of the players cut himself in the hand. He doesn't know where that cut came from or how it got there, but he knows his hand was bloody when he looked at it in the middle of the session. That player was me, by the way.
Okay. I have questions.
Okay, yeah. Which question do you want to ask?
What the fuck, man? How?
I have no idea. I literally do not have any idea. I do not have an idea.
Okay.
The whole day, I went without even touching a knife.
Okay. But were you cutting yourself on yourself because you were looking so sharp that day? Or what was it then?
Nice try, but no. I do not have an idea. I do not have an idea what happened, but I just know that I had to, wash my hand, rinse out the wound, disinfect it, and then put a Band-Aid on it. So that was like taking up like 10, 15, 20 minutes of my time as I was gone from the session. In that time, the GM said, okay, guys, I think we're going to stop today because he had to do some stuff as well.
Okay.
Which cut that session short because he got a visitor more or less and boom, he had to leave as well. So when I came back, I was basically told, yeah, the session was cut short. So I've played for like 20 minutes.
Fuck.
The others played for like an hour and we are supposed to resume that today.
All right.
And hopefully we get to play because I am really craving to play some D&D actually.
Yeah, I get that.
When some people say retail therapy, I have my fantasy therapy.
But cutting yourself in the middle of a session reminds me of that one episode that we recorded at some point where I was, because I was nervous, it was one of the first ones we did. During that, I played around with a knife as you do when you're nervous, obviously, right?
Yeah.
And then cut myself. So yeah, but I knew where the cut came from in comparison to you.
People out there,
don't play with knives.
I do not have a recollection of what episode Niels means.
I just informed you about it after we stopped recording, so they won't be able to find out.
Oh, okay. I was about to give out like a prize for the first person to find the episode. Fuck. Niels, you need to say that you said something in the episode so people go back and listen and give us more watch time on those episodes.
I mean, I didn't say anything, but maybe you can hear me cutting myself or something. I don't know.
All good, I feel.
But please don't play with knives.
Yeah.
It's not a good thing to do. It's dangerous.
Yeah.
You see two idiots.
No. I did not play with a knife. It is
you
a complete misunderstanding that I also would have been an example of someone that you should look to not play with knife. I play with knives at different occasions, but not this time. I didn't cut myself. No.
Okay.
No. I don't know where the cut came from, but I did have a cut.
But nonetheless, don't play with knives. It's dangerous.
Period. Yeah, don't play around with sharp objects. They can be dangerous for you. Then also I had a session that was in my... I never thought about the English name for this campaign. Rule of Secrets, maybe? Right, because I name my campaigns outright, so me and my players have something to connect over or basically talk over. Mm-hmm. So yeah, Rule of Secrets is it. And yeah, that campaign we played, yeah, it was... great. It was the third session and my players are getting to the bottom of the mystery how the prince disappeared.
This
session we had a tarot reading a harrow reading. This is the Pathfinder second edition tarot cards. They have their own tarot cards for their system developed, which is called a harrow reading or a harrow deck. And I use those to give my players basically a tarot reading. So they asked where the prince is and how they can find the prince, where they can find the prince. And yeah, and then we did the harrow reading and my players were all frantic about the message of foreboding disaster that comes if they don't do something right.
Okay.
And I basically gave every one of them kind of the thing is with these harrow decks, which is very cool, is you place 9 cards on a grid and everyone that is taking part in that harrow reading gets to choose a card.
Okay.
And that card represents their own specific role in regards to their question.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, if someone takes the... I remember that we took the Fool card. The Fool stands for naivety and more or less reckless adventure and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And each of them got a role like that. And then you take all the cards again and then spread out another 9 cards, which basically present the... basically like the alignment chart from lawful good to chaotic evil. You spread 1 card out for each of these alignments. And then you reveal the past, the present, the future, which are the columns of that grid.
Yeah.
And then you take one of those 3 cards and basically say, this is the past of the question you have. This is the present and this is the future. So this is why that thing happened. This is what is currently happening. And this is what will happen if you intervene or more or less.
Cool. No doubt.
At least in some aspects of that, right? I'm obviously paraphrasing it. Great tool for your games, I feel. Tarot decks and the Harrow deck, especially because it is made for TTRPGs explicitly. Great, great method to foreshadow your game. And the thing is, one thing, right? We played over Foundry. And the Foundry module for the Harrowing deck gives you a way to basically, I'm going to say this, even though I do not do it, you can rig the tarot reading.
Okay.
Because, right, some people like to use tarot readings, but make sure that that they actually are foreshadowing the events of their campaign that they have already planned with them. So I understand that some people would like to rig the tarot reading more or less. I don't do it because I firmly believe that, first of all, tarot is an art form. If you believe in it or not, it doesn't matter. It is an art form to read these cards in the right way. This is still something that is kind of important that it is a little bit random because otherwise you're changing fate the way you want to say it. And especially a TTRPG, you shouldn't have your campaign planned out in the first place. So use the tarot deck less as a, okay, I'm making sure I foreshadow the things I actually want to foreshadow, but more of a, okay, if you already have a plan, which I do have an idea of what is happening when they bring the prince back. I have an idea of chapter 2 of that campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And I can foreshadow that even without rigging the cards, because every card I get, I can somehow say that connects to when you bring the prince back to town or back to the country and what happens after. I can make something up. And even better, if I get something from the cast that isn't even in my ideas yet for the second chapter, I can use that explicitly. You have the power to literally say, when that hero deck says X and Y is going to happen, great betrayal is going to happen, a war is going to happen, then change your second chapter and make it exactly what the card said.
The future isn't set in stone. The only thing that is set in stone is what your players and you already did, basically. Yeah, can't wait to hear more. I just remembered one thing. Once we spoke last, right before or right after, I don't remember exactly, I had one session. It has been some time, but it was about the witch that we talked about quite some time, quite a lot actually, which is entwined with death and all of that. Turns out they found the witch, and there was some discussion among the group whether to kill the witch, dispose of her, or make a deal or whatever, because one of my group was, or one player character was like, yeah, hey, we have to deal with that in some way, rather soon, better sooner than later, because hey, the people are suffering and all of that, the snowstorm is fucking up their whole lives for the last 10 years. And another character was like, yeah, but I want to learn how she did that and all of that happened. So they had some discussions among themselves, but turns out the witch was or someone stole something from the witch, and the snowstorm is just a after effect of her trying to interrogate the now dead and now and sometimes not dead person, because okay, she can bring them back to life and just kill them again and bring them back to life and kill them again until this person tells her where he stashed the shit that he stole.
Okay.
And the snowstorm is just an after effect of that. But
oh, yeah, obviously. The snowstorm, it's just an after effect of what I do. I'm so powerful.
Yeah, basically that's the thing. And yeah, there was one, I just remember that this already happened after you talked about the tarot deck, because there was one specific deck of cards somewhere in the den. Obviously, it was the deck of many things that she just had lying around there as decoration, basically. But yeah, I mean, if you are an arch fey and was once the fey that ruled over a certain section of the Feywild in my world, you are a pretty powerful being. So just having a snowstorm for some years is not really a big deal to achieve. And if you've lived for thousands of years, 10 years are like, it's a long afternoon. Who gives a crap, right? So there's that. And yeah, but they made a deal that they will bring back the things that got stolen from the witch. But in return, the witch will stop the snowstorm and give something back to the people that she unnecessarily or unwillingly tortured as well. So we'll see how and when that continues.
Yeah.
But I'm still excited to see where all of this shit is going.
I can understand why. It sounds interesting, and I'm very looking forward to hearing more about it, if you get to play that more.
Yeah, I will. Just a matter of time.
Just a matter of time. I have nothing else. We both have a lot of sessions coming up, or two sessions coming up together. Mm-hmm. I have three coming up, but yeah, we will talk about those the next time around on Double DM. For now, we should send you first to our sponsors, The Wandering Tavern from Homie and the Dude, and second to our main episode on making your games hardcore. Today's episode is brought to you by our friends at Homie and the Dude and their new Kickstarter, The Wandering Tavern. Just like their last Kickstarter, Sky Sephyrs, they will deliver incredible content for you to get immersed in a new and unique location inspired by the works of Studio Ghibli, full with plot hooks, mystery, threats, and everything else you will need for a campaign of your favorite TTRPG packed into this one system-agnostic location. Included in this Kickstarter are 15 giant battle maps, 33 NPCs ready to be used, 30 different engaging and interesting plot hooks, 18 new magical items ready and waiting for your players, and 13 setting-themed recipes, new mechanics, and a whole of world-building features for you to use. The Wandering Tavern is 100% human-created with absolutely no AI involvement. So if you're convinced like me, check the link in the description for the Kickstarter and go right ahead and back today. And I will see you in the Wandering Tavern. Hey listener, how are you enjoying the show so far? Tell us about it in whatever way you see fit. Go to our social media pages and add us or DM us about your favorite episode of the show. We would love to hear from you on what impact our show might have had on your home games. Or you could review us on your podcast app of choice and leave us a nice message with a 5-star review. And if you want to go above and beyond, bring a friend into the fold. Tell them about our show and refer us to them so they can get a piece of the pie as well. Thank you for listening to Double DM and joining us on this incredible journey.
So Emil, you know that my players currently are on top of a mountain range and traversing that terrain.
Yeah.
And trying to find a witch to gain more information, more power, and free the people that live up there from the ice storm that has been going on for over 10 years now.
Yeah.
Let's just say a high mountaintop with a snowstorm constantly is pretty dangerous to traverse, right? I think we can agree on that.
I would die.
I think most people would, actually. But that's kind of one thing that I wanted to talk about with you. Today is in general dangerous terrain, or what this can entail, or how you can make your games more dangerous, more hardcore, if you will. One of the biggest things that you can do, or one of the more or less easiest things in quotation marks, is using extreme weathers is one of a big thing. Obviously it depends on what system you are playing, what setting you have, and all of that, and how that works, but in general extreme weather is a thing in nearly every TTRPG, mostly. To what extent is a completely different matter here?
I mean, the thing is, you can easily distinguish between two types, I would say here, and that is one, mechanical things, and just, first of all, just the flavor. They often work together, as they should, but extreme weather is a great, great way to, first of all, just set the scene.
Yeah.
Right? It is constantly there, it is annoying, it is, it is ever-present, it is always annoying, and it is hindering by whatever means that mechanically says and you as the GM say, right? But extreme weather is just always there. People have always experienced weather because that is the lived experience we have here on Earth. We have clouds, we have sun, we have rain, we have hail, we have storms, we have tornadoes, we have whatever, right? And these extreme weather conditions, playing them up to be part of a TTRPG, making them the forefront of the description of the scene, for example, it will help you set the stage for a more gritty survival feeling, right? If you tell your players you're all extremely cold, even though that might not necessarily mean to deal damage or not necessarily reflect in any kind of mechanical way, you are cold. You are freezing. You haven't really done anything. You haven't eaten all day. You have been on your feet tracking all day, and you're just in a bad mood. Now, roleplay. It will have impacts on roleplay.
Of course, and it should, because in my case, they have been trekking to a rough mountain terrain, which is hard on its own, but all of that in a snowstorm, basically constantly. There is meters high snow that you have to traverse through. If you don't have the right equipment, or even if you do, it's a pain, but if you don't, it's nearly impossible to traverse all of that. And then ever-changing winds, the direction, just no sunlight, more or less. It's all just very oppressing and invoking a feeling. And that's one thing that makes games so much more gritty, is invoking feelings. And one way is to do that with weather, because it's ever present and everybody knows it to a certain extent. And I think having reference points for your players, at least in my cases, that helped. Even if the characters themselves might not have a thermometer with them, but saying, hey, your snowstorm, in the snowstorm, it's about minus 60 degrees Celsius cold. My players never experienced minus 60 degrees cold weather, but they
Thank
can
God
imagine.
They didn't.
Yeah, but they can imagine based on the whether they have experienced. So they can reflect that better into their characters.
Yeah. The thing about the descriptions you give as a GM, right? They are always a translation of the game world into what the character and what the players understand. Mm-hmm. You need to make the players understand what you're talking about, not the characters. The characters feel these experiences. Just as an anecdote, right? When we're talking about magic, how do you describe magic? Well, you want your players to have some sort of point to understand magic, even though it is magic and shouldn't be understood fully by players because they don't have a grasp on magic as fantasy characters would have. However, I always think about, okay, so when a player touches a magical artifact, they always want it to be just a little bit of radiation, more or less, a trickling in their fingers, some sensation rushing over their body as if they were getting goosebumps as the magical energy floats through them. Maybe the object is a little bit, is not necessarily vibrating, but it is shifting. It is slowly moving at a high frequency or something, whatever you want to call it, however you want to phrase it. You want to give them the feeling that they understand it. You want your players to have a sense of reference. And you get that from the real world. So using real world temperatures is obviously good, right? The thing is, the characters would have never fucking created the same measurements of temperature that we have in our real world. No, they wouldn't. Because why? They might have similar ones. Yes, but those still have a place of origin. And their place of origin is based on the lived experiences of that world.
Exactly.
So maybe minus 20 degrees Celsius is cold for humans here on the real world, but in your fantasy world, minus 20 degrees is nothing. Especially because many people can get cold resistance, right? Those people will be able to resist way, way, way lower temperatures. And you need to account for that. The entire experience changes. You need your points of reference because it doesn't matter if you have the perfect description of your world in world and everything is coherently fitting perfectly and your players are sitting there, okay, so what does that mean? Have failed the assignment, more or less. You want to set a stage for your players to play on. If you don't do that, that's bad. And the thing is, with environments in extreme weather and hardcore mechanics or stuff like that, setting the stage is the most important thing, right? You want your players to play on that hardcore stage. You want them to express the hardcore feelings that this hardcore environment evokes. It is freaking fucking cold. You want the characters to be shivering. So you need to tell your players your characters will be shivering.
And I think a great way to invoke even more feelings in the players to let them translate them to their player characters is to focus on one or two senses at a time to not overwhelm it. At least that's what I experienced works best. It's because most of my players fill in the blanks by themselves. If I say, you are fucking cold, it feels like it's minus 60 degrees outside and the cold wind burns your skin. It's like a million needles sticking in your skin all day long. The rest of the feelings can be filled in or interpreted by the players themselves. They can do that. Everyone can do that. Every player got this, even to what extent you want. That doesn't really matter. But focusing on one or two senses directly in an explanation when you yourself do not feel all the senses of the character because you are a fucking player, you can't. You are not on a mountaintop in minus 60 degrees weather. That's one reason. But as a person in a situation, you feel and notice and register every sense to a certain degree. Yeah. But in a description, if you engage every sense, the description gets lengthy and boring. But if you focus on the most prominent one or two senses, it gets down to the point, but still invokes that feeling. And most readers, and in this case, in TTRPGs, most players can translate those evoked feelings to their own that they then put into the character to play out. So my go-tos are always temperature is a big thing that I focus on when I'm describing extreme weathers. And most of the time, it's the feeling or the sense of touch. How the ground feels or how the wind feels on their skin, that's usually, mm-hmm. in most cases, the way I go about explaining or describing extreme weather. That depends, obviously. It can be that a sense of smell is a big thing as well that is often overlooked, mm-hmm. in my experience. For example, in a swamp, that could could engage, yeah. the sense of smell, less so the temperature or the moisture or whatever, right? You have so many different attacking points or points of interaction where you can set your description or base your description off of, that your players can then fill out their own or the rest on their own, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know what you mean. But okay, weather aside, we're not here to talk about weather for 50 minutes. We're here to talk about hardcore environments, hardcore mechanics, making the game harder. More or less, right? And weather is a big thing in that, because I think it is the most often overlooked challenge of the world. Because where we're coming from, right, is we want to challenge our player characters in new and different ways. We want to advance the challenges a level up, but without actually increasing the damage and health the enemies have, for example. We want to create more challenges that they have to maybe succeed at once, right? They don't just have to beat they have to beat the Death Knight in the sandstorm, more or less. And while the Death Knight isn't having any problems with seeing and hearing them, they all of a sudden do not have their senses for them. And I think that is right where weather comes in, especially extreme weather. You can very, very greatly impact the senses of the characters. And when you impact the senses of characters, if you take away their scent, if you take away their hearing, if you take away their sight, they will have a problem all of a sudden. It is a very big shift. I mean, try walking around your apartment for 5 minutes with your eyes closed. Sure, you roughly know where everything is and you probably won't necessarily knock over anything important, but you might bump into a door or you might bump into something. And that is the experience that you somewhat want when you impact the senses of the characters. You want them to suddenly lose something that they've relied on. Right? I'm not saying that it's not possible to live without eyesight. Blind people exist and nothing would change for them. That would be, by the way, a great moment to let that character shine more, because they've lived that experience. In that experience, more or less, they can help the others, right? They can shine in that moment. Exactly. They can use their lived experience to their advantage now. But when you use weather, when you use these extreme conditions or whatever, you want to be impacting the characters in a way that challenges them to think of something new creatively, to solve the problem at hand, or to avoid more problems at hand. And I think that's what you want, right? You want to challenge them. You do that not just through giving them descriptions and having flavor and stuff like that. You do that through mechanics.
Yeah.
In a TTRPG, you do that through mechanics. You also do that, right, through flavor. If one of the characters says, I hate warm environments, and you put them into a desert, and that player is a great player, like most people are, they would play their character differently in that moment. It is warm, everything sucks here, I want to go back to my northern icy region, and I don't want to walk around in a desert place. Well, you have to now.
Exactly. It is, or to use environments in a interesting way, is, for me, challenging something the character is used to, challenging their comfort zone and pushing them out of it. For example, being it the heat thing that you just mentioned, is just, it doesn't do anything necessarily mechanically in that instance. It can, and it sometimes should, but it doesn't have to. But it still pushes the character out of their comfort zone. And that's what environment can do greatly or immensely in certain situations. Or with the sandstorm, if every character relies on sight except one, that one person will now be the absolute beast in that situation and show them, hey, this is the way, blah, now let's go that way.
This environment, this situation isn't necessarily a challenge for me. I know the challenge. I've been working with this challenge for years. I've lived this experience. I've been born here, stuff like that, right? I recently watched Dune Part 2. Obviously not spoiling anything, but right, when the main character is being taught how to walk along the sand and to disrupt his rhythm so he doesn't attract sandworms. That is something, right, for example, that is part of exactly what we're talking about. These dangerous environments. A desert planet with giant creatures that are lurking beneath the surface, waiting to attack you when you do a wrong thing. And that is walking in a rhythm. They detect the rhythmic waves, the seismic waves you send out from your foot. So you disrupt your rhythm and you are walking in a strange pattern to not attract them. That is part of that. That is dangerous environments. That is challenging the players to do something differently. And you can do that mechanically. You can tell your players, I'm not thinking of a good way to do this in D&D, by the way. So this could be a fault of D&D, or I'm just not thinking of one right now. But you could let your players make checks at a certain given intervals that decide how good they are at walking stealthily through the desert. So you could make a stealth check, or you could make, I don't know, an acrobatics check, because they have to disrupt their movements into certain different patterns or stuff like that, right?
Yeah, or a concentration check to always think that falling back into rhythm or all of that.
For example, you could make an intelligence, just straight intelligence or straight wisdom or straight con. You can think of different ways to challenge them. But this is an extra challenge, because now they have to face that challenge. Maybe the players have an ingenious way to avoid this challenge. I have a flying carpet. Can we just use that to fly across the desert? Yeah, 100% do that. But again, the environment and the challenge still stands. You have this dangerous thing. And for example, it is a desert. Maybe the movement is difficult. You only work your way across it slowly. You cannot make that much pace. You can't run, really. You can't fast travel, more or less. You can only travel at medium normal speed. And when you travel at normal speed, you risk this and this. That is also a type of challenge, because especially when you then put a timer on the players to go across this desert in the span of 3 days, but they would need to travel fast for that, but they can't because of the desert, then they need to get creative and find ideas on how to get across this desert quicker. If one of your players has watched Dune, maybe they want to attract one of these sandworms and start riding it across the desert. That is something very cool and something very fun, and you can do that. But you only get to that point if you think about the environment the players are in and what challenges that environment poses.
Exactly.
And you need to do that. I'm really advising you to do this. Think about the... I'm actually thinking about this very much in a video game term. What biome are they in currently? And you can go as simple as with Minecraft. Are they in a plains biome? Are they in a forest biome? Are they in a desert? And then think about, okay, desert. What do I think of deserts? They are hot. They are cold at night. That is one environmental challenge of a desert, for example. They get very, very hot at day. And when the sun goes down, they get very, very cold. That is an extreme temperature change that you need to deal with. And using that fact about environments in your games to make a new challenge for the player characters, it is going to elevate your game, because your players will feel more immersed and they will feel challenged and they will have fun finding creative ways to solve this challenge, because they cannot solve this challenge by I hit it. There's nothing to hit with your axe. You need to think, and that is fun.
Yeah, and one thing that especially that you mentioned now, that you mentioned slower travel or slowed down travel pace is rations, for example, supplies, and keeping track of those and having to manage how many supplies do you have to get, or how many supplies do you have left now that you are suddenly in this position, and how can we ration those to last us the way that we need to, especially with those more or less environmental travel situations or challenges. It becomes kind of a puzzle that you as a player have to solve to advance in the game. It's not the most difficult puzzle, and it has multiple ways of solving it, but you have to think of a different way than just, yeah, I walk in a straight line and get to where I need to in the perfect time, and enter when I need to enter with all the tools at my disposal. In general, resource diminishment is a big thing in using environments and making your games more interesting.
Tracking of rations, tracking of ammunition, tracking of equipment. It is something that is very tedious to many games of Dungeons and Dragons and TTRPGs out there for people. I know. I've had the discussion countless times of, we don't track that sort of stuff. And I'm like, sure, that's fine. And you don't have to. But when you get to a certain environment where it is part of the experience of that environment for adventurers to feel like, okay, we need to plan out how many rations we're taking into the desert. You kind of want that.
Yeah.
You kind of want that. I want it. If you out there don't want to have any sort of environmental challenges, don't do that. But I'm telling you. Simply tracking rations and ammunition and stuff like that is gonna elevate your game. And I'm not even saying that you need to track it meticulously every single time. Tell your players every single time they go for a long rest that they need to track off one ration. At the beginning of the journey, talk to your players about make sure that you have enough rations, food, and water prepared. And then along the journey, you can just take points where it is where it would make sense. Okay, you have taken rations for 10 days and you've traveled for 5 days. That is not hard math, people. You can easily say you only have 5 rations left. And now when the sandstorm blows through, you are losing 2 rations. So you only have 3 for the next 5 days. What do you do? What do you do, people? It is simple. There is not much tracking involved. There's not much thinking involved. And the thing is, you can take the 5 minutes before the travel to make a simple spreadsheet or just table on a piece of paper that just checks how many rations does everyone have in the party. And then every time you say, okay, long rest, tick one off.
Or yep.
Calculate -1. It is simple. It is not hard. And I'm done of pretending that it is for some people. If you don't want to do that, if that's not part of your fun, especially when you're in normal environments, if your characters are traveling along a very well-paved road where cities lie, yeah, okay, I understand that you don't track rations. But if they go into an isolated area where no one is and nothing grows or lives, it should be very important to track these things because they can be the breaking point of making this encounter that you're running harder. Because, okay, the players now see something flying up ahead. It is a dangerous creature. It is a white dragon, for example. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing else. The players haven't seen food in 2 days. They are going to be desperate enough to do something with that dragon. Be it kill it to eat it, be it make a bargain with it to get some rations from it, or follow it to a place where it is hunting so they can maybe get some scraps.
Yep.
What the fuck? How cool is that?
Yeah.
You only get that when you tell your players you don't have rations anymore. You're not eating anymore. What do you do to solve this problem?
And I think especially tracking ammo and rations is a pretty easy thing. But the one thing that I would love to get into a bit, but never did so far, is tracking weight and encumbrance, especially in D&D. Because that can, or that is a very fluid thing, because you have rations that weigh stuff and you have always have input and output of your inventory that can get tedious quite quick. That's what I fear.
Encumbrance gets pretty fucking shit real quick.
Exactly. But if you have a easy system for that, or in whatever system you are playing, tracking encumbrance is pretty easy with just you have light, heavy, and not existent weight, and you have that much space to blah 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 to make it more of a you have 10 rations, now go do that. It's you have for example you have 10 spaces of space, and this object weighs 3. This object weighs 1.
This is how much you can take.
Down and not you have that much multiplied by that to have that carry weight. But if you are that and that, you can push more and blah, blah, blah. That can get nightmarish pretty quick.
Encumbrance can get pretty darn hard real quick. However, I propose the way my players and I are doing it. Common sense. Common sense is most important. You aren't able to carry 10 weapons at the same time.
Yeah.
No way you are. Sure, I would be available to say, 10 daggers is no problem. But try carrying a bow, 20 arrows and in a quiver, a long sword, a fucking lance, then a hammer, then 2 daggers. It gets really, really encumbering real quick.
Yeah, I can get down to a bow with arrows, a shield, a sword and a spear. That's fine, but that's about the extent of it.
Yeah.
There is no more space on you. And you don't have a backpack big enough for a spear. Don't tell me you do.
Yeah.
There isn't.
One thing that we always say is the hero bag. Basically, a backpack that somehow fits every kind of equipment. So you don't necessarily have to think too much about, okay, what to do there. However, I'm saying this. Tracking encumbrance the right way, the way the game intends, and going, even though, right, for example, one of our characters in one of our games has an alchemy kit with it, that would break at the first time he fell to the ground, right? Obviously, it doesn't, because that would be kind of unfun. At the same time, it could be exactly a consequence of being in a dangerous environment where such things could happen.
Exactly.
Traversing a mountain range, climbing a cliff, and falling down might just deal damage to you, but it might also break your equipment. Another thing, that is another consequence, another challenge of dangerous environments and more or less hardcore games. And I'm really using hardcore as a catch-all term for anything that is above the normal, yeah, you just have to fight this enemy kind of challenge game.
Mm.
Where the environment, where the weather, where consequences pose challenges to you.
Yeah.
Where challenges lurk in more ways than one, more or less. And where those consequences are often very dire. Because destroying equipment is a dire consequence, especially if you're in an isolated place. Suddenly, the paladin doesn't have his sword anymore with him. Well, that's bad. How does the paladin fight now?
What was it? A rust monster that destroys?
A rust monster.
Yeah.
A rust monster destroys every kind of metallic equipment when it attacks, I think. So that is also part of that. That is a very, very fun mechanic, because at first it feels like you're punishing the players for fighting a monster. But at the same time, you're not punishing them, especially if you made it clear that this monster rusts equipment when they attack it or when they fight it. If done right, it is just another challenge, another consequence of actions.
Exactly.
Something that you explicitly want in your games, in my opinion.
Mm.
Because it gives your players a moment to go, oh fuck, what do we do now? And think outside the box. And TTRPGs are 50% thinking outside the box and 50% dick jokes.
Yeah, that's about right.
So get to that thinking outside the box, and you do that through these unique challenges of environments, of severe weather, of special enemies that deal certain consequences like losing money, losing equipment, losing ability scores, right? For example, the strength Dane shadows deal in D&D.
Oh, I love that. I love that.
Shadows are something that is, in every single campaign I've played so far, I have used shadows in D&D. Because I love the strength drain they do. It is a ticking time bomb for the characters. If my strength drops to zero, fuck, I'm dead.
The thing why I love shadows and their strength drain is one shadow isn't a problem, but a lot of shadows quickly become a problem because the fight is getting worse and worse for your, especially your melee fighters, because they deal less and less damage every turn. They hit less and less reliably, and changing those dynamics in mid-combat is so amazing, something really fun to think about.
It is an escalating threat, really. And that is where you want to be. You want escalating threats. Threats that are, let's say, at a medium range when you start the combat or start the encounter, the challenge, whatever. And they get progressively worse. Enemies that stack HP or damage the longer you fight them, that get stronger and stronger, making you weaker and weaker, or losing certain things, right? We've did episodes on making combats harder and challenges in combat, like timers and stuff like that, right? It is where you're at. And this is part of this episode, right? You want these certain other unique challenges that are not just who does more damage to the other party first, or who makes the other party go to zero HP first. It is something entirely different. The monster doesn't rely on actually winning the combat, sure, but it relies to win the combat not just on reducing the HP of the opponent to zero, but actually by making them unable to fight long for more.
Exactly.
Dropping the strength of them to zero so that this demon can suck their souls out because they're not strong enough to even hold their own soul in their bodies anymore. That is also hardcore. It isn't just simple, normal D&D. I hit it and I win when its HP drop to zero. There is so much extra and stacked on top of this that you need to think about, that it adds to the experience.
And I think especially one thing that I implemented in my D&D games currently, in all of the D&D games I play at, is the gritty realism rules rest. Because I think it makes more sense in a storytelling way to not fully pack every day to make it interesting or full of encounters to make it interesting and challenging for the players, but have, for example, a week. But another thing that this does is stretch out their rations, their equipment usage over a longer period of time and decrease their regeneration rate, if you want to put it in gaming terms, basically. You have drastically reduced regeneration when a long rest takes a week and not just a night of 8 hours of sleep. And then planning ahead and having timers on certain quests or on something that is happening in the background, that if by this and this date, this and this happens in the background, if nothing is done about it. But your players are low on resources because they spent that on the last couple of days fighting and traveling and whatnot, but still want to kind of not let that happen. That would happen if no one intervenes. So now they have to make a decision. Do we make have a long rest and deal with the consequences of our quote-unquote inaction later? Or do we try to stop that but risk more danger to our characters?
The thing is here, right? These environments, they get the characters to be desperate.
Exactly.
And I'm going to say it as a GM that loves to have their characters desperate. You want them desperate for ideas, for creative solutions, for problem solving. It is great to have your characters desperate because when they are desperate, they will try the most insane shit ever. And that is where you want them as a GM, because now you get them taking risks. And I've said it before, I'm saying it again. Taking risks is part of TTRPGs.
I have a story for that.
Going the safe route all the time. Yeah, sure, it works. But let's be real. When you're supposed to save the world, when you're supposed to kill the enemy Demon King, you need to take risks to do that, because that Demon King will take the risks. Or necessarily his taking, I'm always taking the safe side, is stronger than yours. I'm always taking the safe side. You need to be taking risks. And these environments, they drive them to taking risks. And when they take these risks, they do incredible shit. And I'm saying this really as a fan of player characters. They are doing incredible shit when they are pushed into a corner.
Yeah, I have an anecdote for that.
Sure.
With being pushed in a corner. And one of my games, where I was a player actually, we sailed along a sea and got attacked by a sea serpent kind of thing. Sea dragon, sea serpent, something along those lines. Yeah, it was a more or less even fight, but at some point we are basically driving a ship skeleton, which is not desirable on an open sea. Let me tell you, it gets windy. It's shit. But the sea serpent wasn't looking so good either, so it could go either way still. But we wanted to save the ship to a certain degree to get to the next port so we could all survive. So what did one of one of my co-players do? It detached a gun or a cannon, stood on top of it with a burning pole and just stood there as bait, let themselves be swallowed and shot the cannon inside the serpent.
Yeah.
Trying to do extra damage because, hey, inside, no hard scales, easier to hit, more soft tissue to hit, blah, 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 blah. And it just worked because it was fucking cool, or because the serpent had now dealt enough damage to die or whatever. I don't care. It was an amazing situation caused by desperation and risk-taking.
Yeah, and you would have never gotten that if the environment the players were on, their ship wouldn't have been destroyed, become more and more dangerous to them.
Exactly.
And I think the thing is, there's a thousand different ways mechanically you can go about this, right? You can make the ship difficult terrain. Now it is harder to move across it. That is a very good first step, because it involves your players being restricted in what they can do at first. So they have to plan maybe for longer. They can't just move across the deck that freely anymore. They have to now take ways around it. I'm always thinking about the first season of Critical Role where Vecna's tower was sundered into several different pieces from Matt Mercer, and then he brought out the battle map of the sundered tower, of this destroyed tower with different pieces floating across the sky. And I'm like, yes, because now all the players and all the characters have to think about, what do we fucking do? He is flying up in the air and we don't even have a place to stand on anymore. How do we even fight him now? And Matt went, yeah, figure it out. You guys have tools at your disposal. You just need to figure them out and use them. So then they used them, right? They polymorphed, they had Big B's hand, they had flying brooms, they had whatever, right? They had enough tools at their disposal. But they would have never maybe used these tools if it weren't for the tower being destroyed and Vecna flying up into the air. You get these moments only when the players are desperate for the solutions, or not necessarily desperate in this moment for Critical Role, at least, I think, but generally when you give them opportunities to use these tools. And that is when the terrain around them is, for example, dangerous, destroyed, or uninhabitable and untraversable. A very flat, duny desert is also something that can lead your players to using special equipment, like the flying carpet to fly across it, so they don't have to do any sort of special things to avoid the creatures lurking below.
Yeah, or loss of liquid through just no water source, for example, in a desert.
Yeah.
Now you have, for example, the decanter of endless water or whatever. Or you could have the alchemy jug that just produces honey or some shit like that.
I mean, the thing is, right, for example, one thing that I thought about, we had a cleric in one of my games where they ventured into dangerous environments and they went, we don't need to take extra rations. We have the cleric who can cast create water or purify food and drink, right? We can just still use swamp water and purify it.
Mm-hmm.
Until the day they didn't have any single spell slot anymore to cast that spell. And then they went, shit. We're in the middle of a swamp. We have no way of currently getting rations. So we have to not take a long rest. So we can't take a long rest. So we need to find a way to get some fresh food and water so we can even long rest to keep our adventure going. D&D characters are pretty fucking powerful, and TTRPG characters in other games might not be. If they have tools at their disposal that they can use to circumvent the challenges, right? You as a GM should think of ways how to get rid of those tools at least temporarily, right? In D&D, it's easy. They don't have the spell slots, they don't cast the spell. Easy. It's not that about actually making them lose these tools however, or even actually disabling the tools for them, but you should have ways how it could happen. Just be prepared, right? It's not about necessarily also planning to do it, but if you have, if for example, the alchemy jug, right? It's not necessarily a spell slot, so they can use it even after a long combat, even after they don't have spell slots anymore. So how could you disable the alchemy jug in a dangerous environment so that they at least feel the dangers of that environment for at least one night? An anti-magic zone caused by a magical artifact would be one very out of the left field kind of explanation, but it would work, especially if you tell your players, this is a magical forest. There are certain magical effects around you that could cause stuff like this. And then you say, okay, yeah, you're basically in a patch where there's an anti-magic zone. Have fun. Sure, that works. That would work. That would 100% work. But it's about thinking about these environments beforehand to then create challenges for your player characters. And if you lay the challenges out for your players, they will find creative solutions for them beforehand. And you want them to, at the same time, have these solutions beforehand and come up with them in the moment. Let's be real, coming up with these solutions beforehand is also part of the hardcore experience, because it gives your players a feeling of preparedness, and you want them to sometimes just feel prepared, like they did something right.
Yeah, exactly. It's just fun to see all of that. And in general, just create, or one thing that is amazing as well is create situations where they have to choose how they want to use their tools to either get through that combat more safely or have food and drink for the long rest. If they have to choose in combat, hey, I could use my third level spell slot for this and that, or do I preserve it for our or to have guaranteed enough food and water to have our long rest with create food and water, for example. Just and there we are. This is something that we've said over and over again, is create situations where characters have to choose. Make them choose something, whatever it is, but give them choices to make. This is what makes the game fun, because TTRPGs are a game of choice in the end. You always have path one or path A or path B. You have to choose one or the other. And then depending on what situation you're characters are in or want to be in or will be in or whatever, adjust these paths accordingly, being it quite literally two paths, or is it, do I use that for this or that, or do I help this one or that one, whatever, right? Creating choices and therefore kind of forcing your characters to choose, or your players to choose, is one instance where quote-unquote taking agency away, quote-end, is okay or needed, because you don't really take agency away, but you force them in a certain direction, which we also said isn't the best thing to do, but you force them to make a choice. But that's just how it is in a certain way.
That's just how it is.
However dumb it sounds, but you know what I mean. They can always choose not to choose at all, but that's also making a choice. So,
right? You want to push your players into positions where they make choices. And exactly. If you want to do that more often, you put them into environments where they're challenged constantly and where the challenges are harder to prevail against is also part of that. So I want to talk about, at the end of this episode, a little bit about the typical mechanical ways that you can challenge challenge the player characters, right? Mm-hmm. The one simple thing is making everyday roles harder or everyday resolutions harder. So let's take the simple dice. It can be any dice and they have to roll. A certain environment gives them a detriment to that roll. So for example, in D&D terms, they roll and they have a -2 to every check in that environment, or they take disadvantage to that check in that environment, right? It's the simple detrimental effect to the resolution mechanic. It isn't necessarily a challenge itself. It's just a constant factor that they have to think about when they make these challenges, right? In a very foggy area, you have very obscured vision. So your perception checks are at disadvantage. In darkness, by the way, your perception checks are at disadvantage.
Even in dim light.
Yes.
In darkness, they just fail if you don't have dark vision.
And when you have dark vision, you roll at disadvantage.
Because it's just dim light. Hey, keep that in mind, people. Dark vision doesn't mean you have basically a non-visible light source with you. It's just, hey, you are able to see. It's not, you won't be the James Webb telescope.
But you give them a disadvantage on their certain checks. That is a very passive effect of environments, but it's a very good effect at first because it slowly builds up. Suddenly they can't see very well. They aren't really doing anything. And when they hold their rests at night, they hear strange noises in the fog that they can't really place. Boom, your long rests aren't as effective anymore. You all, I don't know, for example, the wizard and cleric, both of you only get half of your third and fourth level spell slots back because you didn't have a good sleep. That is another challenge. That is another thing, right? Taking resources away from them through means of... That is another challenge. What other ways are there, Niels? Can you think of any?
Putting timers on things and forcing them to make a decision more quickly is something that is just perfect for to make games more interesting.
Timers are great. Especially if you give them a timer beforehand and then tell them through the environment you can't make that timer if you do it normally. There are ways how you can do it, obviously. It's not that it's impossible, but you will have to think of the right way to do it.
Yeah, it's like, you have to move through this desert to be at the next town in, let's say, 5 days. And yeah, it is possible to do that if there are no sandstorms, no quicksand, no nothing, right? That's on a normal day's travel, or 5 normal days of travel, you would make it. So in 5 days, you have to be there because there is situation X. But as soon as they enter the first day, just normal travel. But the second day, quicksand, shifting dunes, sandstorm, whatever. Something that slows down their travel, or that changes the situation at all, or completely. Some other outside factors that move up the timeline at some point. Changing the timer or changing the way they have to, or the environment to engage with that timer is amazing. It's just fun to use as a GM, and in my experience, fun to experience as a player, because suddenly your brain just scrambles and tries to think of all the different ways you can still make that go.
I mean, another very simple way is damage. Taking away their HP is a great way. And now one of the things is, right, we've talked about it in a recent recap of an episode, more encounters. Spread encounters out, right? D&D, as rules as written, expects you to have a certain number of combats a day. Most people don't do that. They do one combat a day at maximum because players oftentimes plop down to long rest instantly, but have more combats, more smaller combats between long rests. And you can do that through either giving your players no opportunity to long rest or by having more combats before they can get to a long rest again. Use survival rules, tracking resources, making sure that they can only long rest when there are certain conditions met, making long resting harder. I know Niels uses in one of his games the rule to long rests are 7 days of rest and not just one single 8-hour sleep. That means the game is incredibly more hardcore because now you have to think about how to do your short rests, really.
Yeah, the short rests are just a night's sleep, but try finding 7 days of time in a dangerous environment to heal up.
Especially when you're on a timer.
Exactly.
Right?
That's difficult.
It's impossible, period. And that is fun at the same time. Maybe the players find a way. maybe Niels gives his players at some point an artifact that gives them, I don't know, a status chamber where they could just literally sit for 7 days in. Sure, maybe. But that would then still have to be an existing thing.
Let me tell you, they had one, but the character was changed by the player who doesn't want to play the character anymore. So now they don't have a status chamber anymore. Not my problem. I created that. That's not my deal anymore.
Happens. One other thing is, right, conditions, right? When your players don't long rest or short rest in your instance, Niels, they get exhaustion. And exhaustion accumulates. At first, it's minor, but then it gets longer. You can't walk anymore, or your walking speed is halved. Your speed becomes zero. You die. Stuff like that. Other conditions, right? The players need to save against, I don't know, if you have one of these comical ice storms, blizzards, right? If the players don't save, they get stunned for an hour because they are frozen in ice.
Yeah.
I mean, do that if you want to. I won't say no. Maybe not my cup of tea in my games. As a GM, I wouldn't necessarily say that, but it would be kind of fun, not gonna lie. And really using that, using conditions and stuff like that, if effects, especially negative on the characters, is a fun thing.
Yeah, and one thing to keep in mind, you can stack multiple instances of making games harder. That makes it, at some points, really fun.
You want to have several stacking factors,
yeah,
right?
Just imagine, in the situation my players are currently in, they have to trek through snowstorms that sometimes turn into brutal blizzards where I let them roll checks every hour to see if they find their way that they wanted to go and to see if they, even though they have cold weather clothing, if they resist those blasting temperatures and or getting exhaustion for that. But remember the rest rule I have? 5 to 7 days is a long rest and you get one exhaustion level reduced per long rest. Remember that? So now you trek 4 hours through a blizzard, get 2 levels of exhaustion, so you kind of have to chill for 2 hours, for 2 weeks, but you are still in the snowy mountains and want to kill a witch? Do you have 2 weeks to spare? I doubt that. Do you? Let's find out. And there we have the choice that we were talking about, pushing choices on people. It's amazing in TTRPGs. Take away resources and force them to make choices to create awesome and engaging, hard environments, stories, plots, situations.
Yeah.
Amazing shit.
Incredible. And I think with that, we're done for today. Do you have anything else you want to say?
Nope, I don't.
Okay.
So with that, thank you all for listening. Hear you on the next one and bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Double DM. It appears you liked this one, what we had to say, and our advice helped you. Why not show us how we helped you in a rating, or even write a review detailing us how we helped? You can do this on the platform that you are listening on right now. It's just a few clicks, doesn't take long, and helps us out. It gets us out there and our advice into more ears of more people. Thanks again for listening and joining us on this amazing journey. Have a great day, and see you on the next one. Bye-bye.